good morning to you. And Mr. McMahon, you are also here today. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
Justice, I do have one question. I have a senior certified law student with me. Is she able to sit at counsel table and confer in between arguments?
She certainly is.
Thank you.
And you may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Melinda Currens. I'm an assistant public defender appearing on behalf of Douglas County, on behalf of Abbasai P. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. As this court is aware, this case is an appeal of an adjudication of a truancy case in juvenile court. Before I get into the substantive portion of my argument, I would like to address some technicalities. As you are aware, in my brief, I noticed that the juvenile court committed plain error in finding under the wrong subsection of 43247. The court found under sub 1 as opposed to 3B. As the court is aware, sub 1 is a misdemeanor. The court also used an unclear burden of proof, finding under sub 1 on proof beyond a reasonable doubt based on an entered and accepted plea, and on proof beyond a reasonable doubt based on the preponderance of the evidence. We feel that this creates an unclear record for the court.
And you raised that as plain error because you did not ask the court to alter or amend its adjudication order based on those very things you've just described to us, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
In addition, Abbasai is asking that this court reverse the order of the juvenile court due to violations of both procedural and substantive due process. I'd like to start with first procedural due process. We believe that the juvenile court erred when it adjudicated Abbasai without him being present and without him being informed of his rights pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 43279.
Did you present that issue to the trial court?
I did not, no.
Did you object on that basis to proceeding with the adjudication hearing?
No, I did not. I
so object. Would we have to reach that on plain error as well?
I believe the court could also apply not just under plain error, but that it violated the statute under 43279.
But did you raise that issue to the trial court?
No, I did not.
Thank you.
Was there any proof of notice was provided to the juvenile to be there on that day?
No, there was nothing in the record that notice was provided to the juvenile to be there.
So there's nothing that would show that he waived that appearance in any manner?
No.
Thank you.
It is clear under 43279 that the court must inform the parties, the juvenile and their parent, guardian, or custodian of their rights. In this case, the court never informed my client or his parents of the rights prior to trial. As stated in my brief, the Court of Appeals found in In Re Interest of Tory B that it is axiomatic that a juvenile may not waive his or her rights to be advised of his or her rights. And this court also found recently in In Re Victor L, that the court must give effect to all parts of the statute and no word, clause, or sentence should be dismissed as superfluous or without meaning. It is clear under the statute that the court must advise of the rights.
Were you present at these hearings or did Abbasai have a lawyer present at these hearings?
I am his lawyer, yes, I was present.
What impact does the parties refer to it as a written denial. I think of it sort of as a written waiver of arraignment. That may be imprecise. What impact does that written denial or written waiver of arraignment have on our analysis here?
So the written denial was modeled after the criminal court waiver of appearance, plea of not guilty, where generally the lawyer just advised briefly of the rights.
Did the court accept that, so order it?
The court did accept it. It's contained on page 8 of the transcript, and then the court made reference to it and made the order.
When that's typically done, and then the case is set for adjudication, does the judge re-advise him of their rights?
Absolutely. Every court before this, after this.
Assuming they appear at the adjudication.
Yes. At the following hearing, adjudication, or trial, the court does re-advise of all rights and possible consequences when there was a written denial done prior. And so this written denial is a local rule. There is no statutory authority for it. It's been around. I've been practicing for over 20 years. It's been around since then, but it was definitely used at the height of COVID by all six courtrooms, kind of as a way to not bring lots of people in at once, because a lot of times these were done with multiple kids and parents all in front of the court at the same time, hearing the same rights and consequences. So this was just done to basically acknowledge that they are aware that these charges have occurred, but and their attorney has advised of their rights, but in no way functions as a waiver, nor does it state that it's a waiver of the court actually having to give the advisements. Regarding the next part of my brief, we also believe that besides procedurally violating FSA's due process, this was also a substantive violation of his due process. In these proceedings, normally when a juvenile does not appear in court for any proceeding that is substantive, the court will either continue the matter one more time, usually, or issue a capias for the location of the child to be found. In this case, neither was done.
Was there an objection based on substantive due process raised at the time the court proceeded with the adjudication hearing or denied the motion to continue?
I don't believe I made it exactly in those words, but I did make reference to the fact that proceeding would lend less credibility to the proceedings for both my client and his parent for buying in on the rehabilitation process, which falls under due process.
I want to go back just a little bit, and I apologize because this was part of your opening remarks. Is this a correct statement of the order that the judge said, proof beyond a reasonable doubt based on preponderance of the evidence?
Yes. Is that correct? Or
is that what was said?
I don't believe there was an actual finding on the record that came later in the order. But yes, that is what the order says.
The order says that. Did I read that right?
Yes.
Okay, what's that mean?
That's our point, that that's an inintelligible.
What did the judge say on the record?
I'm sorry, I would have to refer to the transcript. I think it was something along the lines of finding the petition true.
Did the petition allege the right subsection?
The petition did, yes, but the order did not find under the correct.
Did the court rule from the bench that the allegations contained in the petition are true, and that was the judge's finding, and then the matter should be set for disposition? Was that the oral pronouncement at the time of the hearing?
I've got it right here. It says that the court hereby finds that the allegations contained in the petition are true, and this matter shall be set for disposition for the next hearing. That's all that it said.
Is that enough? Let's assume there isn't a written order. Is that enough?
I don't believe so under 43-279. Under 43-279-2, if I could continue, the court shall make a finding and adjudication to be entered on the record of the court and describe that the juvenile is a person described under subdivision 1, 2, 3B, or 4 of 43-247 based on proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
And the infraction or the event, I should say, perhaps, was truancy under 43-247-3B?
Correct.
That's how it was pleaded?
Correct.
Yes.
So if I could just summarize regarding the due process, the court has been clear throughout statute or case law, and the statutes are clear that the youth are in these proceedings that are akin to criminal proceedings, that due process must be followed, and the legislature has been clear that fair hearings and all legal rights must be recognized and enforced. This court found in Victor L. that in a truancy case, a youth must be competent. Therefore, it stands to reason that under fundamental fairness, the youth also must be present. The youth was not allowed to be informed of his rights or to exercise any of his rights under 43-279.
If you were successful before this court, what would be the remedy? What would you have us do?
Well, and that's an interesting question because of his age, correct? So we're asking the court to reverse the juvenile court's order, but also to dismiss the proceedings given the fact that my client is age 18 and there's no longer jurisdiction or ability of the state to require him to attend school.
Well, and then conversely, if you were not successful, what would be the impact of our order?
That's an interesting question. I'm sorry, I see my time's out. May I answer?
You may answer.
Thank you. So
we have a certain order here.
I understand. That's an interesting question, because then if it reverts to the juvenile court, then the question, does the court even have jurisdiction to continue to proceed with the client? Under Kevin K., there is some opening that the court would still have jurisdiction. However, my client then is left with collateral consequences of having a truancy without having any sort of basis to attend school, being that he's age 18.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McMahon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Your Honors, may it please the court, Ms. Kearns. My name is Christopher McMahon. I'm a Douglas County Deputy Attorney, and I represent the state. Justice Stacy asked Ms. Kearns what impact a written denial has on our analysis, and that question cuts to the heart of the issue, is what impact does that have? A written denial, it's a procedural document. I have a copy of that here today. I don't believe that this court has ever considered what impact that might have. Now, in Stoneland Livestock versus HBE, this court considered a entry of appearance and found that it was not enough to subject.
We recently wrote about this, did we not, in the criminal context, because whether or not the written waiver or the written not guilty when it's accepted could impact counting days for speedy trial in a criminal context.
Very interesting. Now, if that were to be applied to the juvenile context, does that mean that the juvenile has submitted themselves to the jurisdiction of the court? Further, the document itself, which I have here, advises that the juvenile has been told of their rights, that they have been properly served, and that they do submit to the jurisdiction.
Do any of the juvenile court statutes contemplate the use of such a document?
It is not contained in the statute, Your Honor.
Aren't juvenile courts purely statutory?
They are, Your Honor, and that raises an interesting question, is how does this document fit within the construct of the juvenile courts? Now the state and the courts themselves allow this document to be entered.
Maybe it doesn't fit. Assume we were to say it's a nullity. Assume we were to say that. What does that do?
Your Honor, that would have a fundamental impact on juvenile courts. Currently, arraignments are often...
juvenile courts or just the Douglas County Juvenile Court?
You're right, Your Honor. I'm speaking in regards to Douglas County. I'm not aware of the procedure for Sarpy or Lancaster.
This is the custom in Douglas County, evidently.
They are used very often, Your Honor. And to answer your question, when they are used, the juvenile does not appear for the arraignment. Service is not necessarily perfected by a sheriff. Often service is waived.
So if the Lancaster County Separate Juvenile Court and the Sarpy County Separate Juvenile Court have local rules that address written denials, assume that's true. Does Douglas County have a local rule that addresses written denials, or has it just been kind of the common practice?
It has been the common practice of all six of the Douglas County juvenile courtrooms, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So to answer your question, Your Honor, it would have a tremendous impact if this court deems that it is not sufficient to merit the words that are contained within. Now, Your Honors, Ms. Curran's brief assigned three errors to the juvenile court.
Before you move on to that, I'd like to talk about that document real quick. Does that document, is it signed by the juvenile or juvenile's parents?
No, Your Honor. I have it here. It's signed by the attorney, and in it, it states that notice, service, and jurisdiction are proper, that a copy of the petition and summons were duly served on the child and his or her legal guardian according to law, and then it advises of the rights, and it delineates each of the rights.
And you agree with the appellant's attorney that there is actually nothing in the record that shows that notice was given of this actual adjudication hearing date to the juvenile or his parents?
Aside from this document, Your Honor.
But there's no date on that document. I mean, there's no date provided when they have to appear for court?
That's correct, Your Honor. It simply has, it's kind of a form document, which I believe is used for all the different actions that come before the juvenile court. So it doesn't have anything to break out specifics. It just says that a copy of the petition and summons were duly served, and that, let's see.
Well, would you agree with me that if one does not have the notice of the date they're supposed to appear, they cannot waive that appearance? That's nothing that's within their realm of possibilities.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, but I would also say that one of the responsibilities for defense counsel when they fill out this document, and it basically they're alleging under oath when they fill out this document that they have spoken and given the rights to the defendant, that part of that advisory would be a notice of when the trial date would be or the next appearance in court.
But the adverse effects of their assurance shouldn't be held against an uninformed client, should it?
No, they should not, Your Honor. That's
counsel,
very correct.
Does our Bill of Exceptions contain, does our Bill of Exceptions tell us that the judge ordered defense counsel to let her clients and the client and the child's parents know of each court hearing that was set?
I don't believe this particular Bill of Exception specifies that. The state's position is that part of the job of the defense attorney is to notify their client of the court hearings.
The transcript contain orders that direct counsel to let her client and her client's parents know of court proceedings?
No, it does not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, Ms. Currens has alleged that fundamental tenets of due process were violated here, and certainly it is a case of first impression. However, I would point the court to In Re Interest of Brian B. from 2004, that due process is flexible. It calls for protections as the situation demands. The court must weigh the interests of the parents and the state. In this case, it's a truancy, Your Honor. The state has an interest in seeing that all juveniles attend educational programming. The court In Re Interest of, In Re Interest of AMH, juvenile proceedings are civil in nature, not criminal. They emphasize rehabilitation, not punishment. The juvenile court serves as parens patriae. The purpose of the juvenile court is to care and to guide. Your Honor, nobody in that courtroom was there to punish this juvenile. They were seeking to give the juvenile an education, to make sure they're attending educational programming. The state has an interest in seeing that all juveniles attend educational programming.
Well, what impact does the current age of the juvenile have on that?
It does have an impact, and in the state supplemental brief, it discussed that, Your Honor. The state has lost all jurisdiction in this matter. If it were to be referred back to the juvenile court, once a juvenile reaches the age of 18, the truancy statute has no longer any effect in this case.
So is this all moot?
Well, Your Honor, it's the state's position that the allegation one is moot. Allegations 2 and 3 are intertwined and deal with fundamental issues of due process. If this court deems it necessary to provide future information for the purposes of stare decisis, the state would welcome that, and I believe it was defense's position as well in the supplemental brief that we would welcome a ruling from this court just to provide some, I guess, guidelines, if you will, as far as procedural safeguards for the future for the separate juvenile court of Douglas County.
Is the first assignment of error moot if there are collateral consequences from a statement on the record that the child's been adjudicated under 43247-1?
That's a very interesting question, Your Honor. Defense's position is that this court could overturn that and in effect seal those records. I don't have a good answer for that, Your Honor. I would state that on the record, the judge did say that, which I believe Ms. Currens went into, that the allegations were found to be true. I would say that the state alleged it under the proper statute. Now, that burden of proof, true, doesn't specify beyond a reasonable doubt, which would have been the appropriate verbiage. But it's the state's position that the allegations found in the petition were found to be true, and that is sufficient.
When you mentioned sealing the record, what would be how would that work?
I don't know that that's ever been done, Your Honor. You know, in our
it's not your position that this is under the Criminal History Record Act.
No, Your Honor. Again, juvenile court proceedings are civil in nature, not criminal. I don't know that there is any outcome for this court to determine under the assignment of error number one. The state's position is that it is moot. Again, assignment of errors two and three, we would welcome this court's opinion on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There's no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments in In re interest of Abasai P. Counsel, thank you very much. You are excused in the court. We'll go on to the next case of the day.